time to play the game. Time to play the game! It's all about the game, and how you play it.
All about control,
and if you can take it.
All about your debt,
and if you can pay it.
It's all about pain,
and who's gonna make it.
I am the game,
you don't wanna play me.
I am control,
no way you can shake me.
I am heavy debt,
no way you can pay me.
I am the pain,
and I know you can't take me.
To episode 50 of the Objective Secure podcast. Because this is episode 50, we're going to do something special and Mike's not going to talk at all. Right, I'm done. You can start it now.
Welcome to the Objective Secure podcast. My name's Mike.
Hi, I'm Emma.
And this is episode 50, all about the game. So we're going to be talking about gaming groups, gaming clubs, where you can go and play the game when it's time to play the game. Episode 50 is a little bit of a milestone for us.
It's not a milestone for me, it's just one for you.
Well, we were arguing about that off air, and then I went back through the archives, and you have done episodes prior to the first episode. Now, episode 11 is actually A and B, so there's two episodes there.
Yeah.
So, officially, we've done... This is actually episode 51, technically. But you were on, I think it was episode 3, 4 and 5, or 5, 6 and 7, somewhere in the early days.
It's a bit terrible, I don't remember. I'm going to have to go back and have a look.
Well, it's definitely in the show notes. I went and actually had a look to try and figure out which was the first episode you were on. So, but it was episode 11A and 11B where we changed the format and we sort of started what we do now.
Yeah.
And back then they were 50, 60 minute episodes. And I don't think we've clocked in under an hour and a half in quite some time.
We'll do that this time.
Yeah. Well, maybe.
Yeah, we're going to be focused, we're going to be direct, we're going to be onto it.
I don't think so.
You know me.
Good luck with that. Before we get stuck into the topic, though, we've had a few little bits and pieces happen in the hobby community over the last few days.
Oh, has something new come out?
Lots of new things have come out.
And are people super duper excited and know that it's going to go oh so well and they think, wow, this is going to be brilliant. I love the idea of these changes.
About half the people say that. The other half less so. Before we get into Games Workshop, I want to talk very quickly about Privateer Press. From what I understand, one of their lead designers or rules writer, playtesters, I don't know his official title, has actually quit and left the company. Now, that's caused a little bit of a stir locally here in Western Australia because it's seen as a good and a bad thing at the same time. It's War Machine Mark III has definitely been polarizing for a lot of the War Machine players, and it's certainly not been taken up with the gusto and vigor that Mark II was at its peak.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been interesting to see our local players here kind of go, oh, he's leaving. Oh, well, maybe we'll actually see this, and this return, or this, and this get fixed, or this, that, and the other. So it's interesting to see. You know, these are the sorts of things. I learned a lot about Privateer Press through this conversation with this group because I didn't really know. I know they're obviously a private company, unlike Games Workshop, who's publicly listed. So I learned a lot about what's been going on in that company over the last few years in terms of their structure and employment and, you know, what they've been doing. So, yeah, it's interesting to see one of their longtime designers leaving. So... be interesting to watch what happens with War Machine over the next 6 to 12 months.
We don't know why he's leaving.
No, I mean, he's posted some content which you can find on Twitter and social media which implies a few things. I'm not going to get into that here. But it'll be interesting to see what happens with Privateer Press's game and going forward over the next 6 to 12 months, because obviously they should be a reasonable amount in front with his hand still involved in that process at this point. So, yeah, be interesting to see what goes on. Games Workshop, on the other hand, are continuing to steamroll their way through release after release after release in rapid succession. It's funny, we spent years and years and years essentially with limited releases, you know, one a month, or, you know, if we were lucky, it was once a month. Often it was once every 3 or 4 months for each game system, and it'd, you know, it'd be 1 month for 40K, 1 month for Fantasy Battle, 1 month for a specialty game, 1 month for this, 1 month for that. And now we're in a point where, you know, we get weekly releases, literally weekly releases, and often for more than one game system. So we've had the release of Aeronautica Imperialis recently. We've seen the announcements for all the new Warcry stuff. We've seen the previews for the Iron Hands and the Raven Guard for the new Space Marine supplements. We've seen the announcements for Warhammer Underworlds about what's going to happen with cycling out of cards. And we've also seen the previews for Phoenix Rising, which is the first book for Psychic Awakening. So, you know, that's basically in the last 5 days, 6 days. Like, it's just crazy what's going on. I'm going to hit the couple that I'm really interested in because it's our podcast and I can talk about the ones I'm interested in.
Gee, that doesn't sound anything like you, darling.
Aeronautica Imperialis, I'm really keen to see where that game goes. It's been interesting to watch the Games Workshop community talk about it because it's basically X-Wing. It's Games Workshop models, and there's some twists in... you actually get elevation because it's aircraft rather than spacecraft. So there is an elevation dial that goes onto the models as well. But it reminds me, from what I've seen, a lot of X-Wing.
Yeah.
So as soon as they give me Eldar models, then I'll look at it. At the moment, it's Orcs and Imperial, and that's not enough to push me over into actually spending... It's a bit like Titanicus.
Yeah.
It's not enough for me as a hobbyist to...
buy in.
...tip me over. It's actually reasonably priced compared to what Titanicus was for the you know, the Lord of War, whatever they called it, God Edition, where it was like $600 here in Australia. This one's, it's cheap comparatively. It's sort of that big box game price. And it looks like a lot of fun. The models I got to see in person recently, they're a lot bigger than I thought they would be. Like they're at least the size of X-Wing models, if not bigger.
Yeah.
Although there is some weird scale discrepancies. When I saw the Marauder and the Thunderbolt, which I've seen both of those when we've played Apocalypse here with one of our friends, Dizzy, the Thunderbolt is significantly smaller than the Marauder, but in epic scale for Aeronautica, they're not too far apart, which is interesting. That could just be a limitation of sprue size or, you know, however they've packed the main box. The Warhammer Underworlds Future of Competitive Play was announced on the 8th of September, which caused a bit of a stir in the community. We're going to see basically only ever 2 seasons of the game for Universal cards as valid in competitive play. So as soon as Beastgrave, I think is the next box, drops, then all of the Universal cards from Shadespire will essentially be null and void for competitive play.
Yeah.
And all of the Warband boxes from Season 1 are also basically being removed from shelves. So I'm hoping that we'll see a repacked version of those with the Warband cards, the specific Warband cards, which aren't being cycled out.
Yeah.
The character cards, the miniatures, kind of left there and repacked and sold as a separate thing. Because there's 8 Warbands in that first season, 8 in the second, 8 in the third. And while removing the Universal cards is great, I'd hate to see those Warbands... essentially be discontinued.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there. I don't know how they're going to repack it, but I know the stores have all got them labelled as last chance to buy in store and online. So, yeah. What's also been interesting is they've announced what the Shadeglass cards mean. That we've had 2 seasons here in WA where we've released and won by the same person both times.
Yep.
You actually need one of those Shadeglass cards to enter the Grand Tournament that's being held at Nova 2020. I'll actually try and find out what they're going to call it. The Grand Masters Global Championship Finals 2020. So basically, yeah, you're going to get a chance to get an invite to the Underworld's Grandmasters event held in Arlington, Virginia at the Nova Open. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. We've got, like I say, we've had two Grand Clashes in Western Australia now.
I thought Nova was in Washington.
Well, I'm just reading from the community site.
Okay.
So maybe they're moving it for next year.
Well, we really need to find that out.
We do.
Yeah. I'm sure Virginia isn't in Washington. No. I think they're two separate states.
Yeah, so that's been really interesting to see what's happening with that. And the fact that, like I say, those universal cards are going to be cycled around in essentially two season sets, which means obviously Night Vault, which was the second season, has a limited shelf life now.
That will expire in a year.
Yeah. So, and it's not an uncommon practice for collectible card games like Magic the Gathering, who kind of cycle through seasons to keep the game fresh and interesting, yeah. And they'll keep core cards while moving on seasonal cards, and that's kind of what this feels like, except they're moving on universal cards, which is interesting. I would have thought universal ones were the ones they would actually keep, but they're not. So, yeah, that's Shadespire, Underworlds. I keep calling it Shadespire because that's what we first met it as, but we'll try.
Well, yeah, that's true. I guess it is about Shadespire because Shadespire is the one that's being phased out.
Yeah. We've also seen the previews for the Iron Hands and the Raven Guard. The Iron Hands don't interest me a huge amount, not going to lie. They're not an army that I collect. I know one of our Danger Rod collects them, and he's very keen to see this book. The previews we've seen so far, there's a couple of really awesome abilities and powers. The Iron Stone, which is a new relic, is going to make Space Marine vehicles really good. It reduces all damage to friendly Iron Hands vehicles within 3 inches of the relic by one to a minimum one. So it basically makes them wave serpents.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to see a bunch of repulsors and impulses driving around with a character on as big a base as possible to try and maximize that aura.
Cool.
The good thing is, of course, a lot of the Primaris characters that will be able to take this are already on 40 mil bases. So I can see that being a staple. I saw someone trying to already online suggest they could give it to a Chaplain Dreadnought from Forge World, which should be really, really good, except thankfully Forge World have already released an FAQ prior to this release that says you can't put relics on a Chaplain Dreadnought. You know, there's some really good... there's a 2CP Mnemonic Auto Savant, which is a stratagem that affects Maelstrom cards, which basically lets you score the same card twice over two consecutive turns. So you can score sort of eight victory points really easily over two turns with the correct play of this stratagem at the right moment, which is really impressive. We've also got a named character now, Iron Father Ferios, I think his name is, which we saw previewed at our preview we saw in May at our presentation in Queensland.
Yes.
He's now got a name, and we haven't had his full rules yet, but we've had some hints on what he is. And then they've waited 24 hours and then given us the Raven Guard previews as well, which we saw yesterday at time of recording. Nothing here relatively new. Like a lot of it seems to have been taken from the old version of the Codex that we kind of already knew about.
Yeah.
The most interesting one at the moment, though, is the new Doctrine, Surgical Strikes, which basically is going to make the Raven Guard snipers really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a 2CP stratagem that lets them fall back and still shoot and charge again, which is pretty amazing for the right builds. And again, whole list of special issue war gear and relics and warlord traits, new psychic discipline, and obviously Shrike, Master of Shadows, which has been a really polarizing model. But that's nothing new for the hobby community.
And that's okay. Like, different people like different things.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, disagreeing that you like or dislike something is fine. It's how you go about doing that is the more important component of that. So, yeah, with Shrike and also the upgrade pack for the Raven Guard that we've had previewed now, there's been a bit of controversy with his alternative hairstyle life.
I'm going to be honest, it's not really that alternative.
It's the whole Tobey Maguire look from Spider-Man 3.
I was going to say it's a bit of a throwback to the late 90s, early 2000s, but I'm not sure when Spider-Man 3 was. So, okay.
I really like the model in terms of the story and the history that goes with him. I've seen lots of people photoshopping bits of him off to kind of make their versions of him, which I think is fine. It's your model, your conversion.
Conversions have happened since the dawn of this game.
Yeah,
of gaming.
Absolutely. I'm really hoping that the helmet on his waist can be put on his head.
Hmm.
Because I'd actually prefer it with a helmet rather than a unhelmeted head.
Why?
I always struggle with the idea of unhelmeted warriors in science fiction games. There's two reasons for that. Firstly, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me that you'd go into battle and then take your helmet off.
On your hip, yep.
But secondly, it makes it easier to paint. You're not having to paint eyes and skin and all the rest of it. You're painting lenses and armor.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me without helmets on. I actually don't like the base. That's my biggest complaint with this model.
Why?
I don't know. It's actually an L-shaped. It's not a block. It's an L-shaped corner of a building.
Yeah, I can
see
that.
So I really struggle with the fact that it's this kind of weird, flimsy corner thing. Like,
I don't know. It just looks like he's, you know...
Well, he's got a big jump pack. So that's it. He's landed on a corner. Me personally, I'll probably end up rebasing him. Keeping him at the same height, but
yeah.
I'll end up redoing the base because I don't like...
You know you don't have to buy him.
Oh, no, I do, because he's awesome.
Right.
Yeah, that's a foregone conclusion.
Mm, yeah.
We're going to talk now about the elephant in the room for 40K, which is the Psychic Awakening, which was announced at the same time we saw Shrike at Nova, where we got confirmed that every army is involved in Psychic Awakening, which has led to all sorts of speculation and theory around what everyone's going to get and what that means, and are we going to see Tau Psykers and all the rest of it. When they first previewed it, we got a cool little video which called Psychic Awakening, which showed off the Howling Banshee rune, which everyone either didn't know what it was and went, oh, it could be anything. The Eldar players generally knew what it was and went, cool, we're getting Banshees. And then when you scroll down 10 seconds... you see the new plastic Howling Banshee with the same rune on its helmet.
Yeah.
So that tied in quite nicely. So it's the next major narrative for 40K, new rules for every codex.
Mm-hmm.
They released a photo with all the different symbols of all the different factions and then managed to forget several of them in the first publication round, which caused a lot of people to go, hang on a minute.
Does this mean we're not getting it?
Exactly. So there was no Adeptus Mechanicus, there was no Space Wolves.
Yeah.
So there's, if you go to the community site to that post now, it's been updated to include them all. So there's a Harlequin rune there, the Drakari, the Craftworld, Imperium, Chaos.
Well, they're all there.
They're all there now. What's interesting though is they've now got, I'm assuming that's the Grey Knight. So we've got Grey Knights there. We've got, Talons of the Emperor, I suppose is the best way to describe it, which is the Custodes.
Okay.
But we've also got an Inquisitorial Eye, which we haven't had rules for yet. So I'm suspecting that rather than seeing the Inquisitor rules and the Sisters of Silence rules in a White Dwarf, which is kind of what I was expecting them to do to signal the death knell of the Index, we're going to see them printed in these expansion books. So that'll be good because you're not carrying around White Dwarves and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
We've also got the independent ones for the Thousand Suns and the Death Guard and the Blood Angels and Dark Angels and so on. So, yeah, everyone's getting something, which is really interesting. We know the first release for the Eldar, or the Craftworld Eldar, I should say, which are the Howling Banshees. I've seen lots of criticism for the model because it's not new enough. I've seen criticism that it's not female enough. Mm. I've seen criticism that it's too fat, which I, having spoken to a couple of the guys and going through the Eldar sketchbooks, this is the Howling Banshee that Jess Goodwin designed back in the really early 90s. It might even be late 80s. I think it's early 90s.
Now, I'm just going to stop you for a second. Is his name actually pronounced Jess?
Jess or Jez? I'm not sure.
I think it's Jez.
I'm an Aussie. It's
purely from the conversation we had the other
Jez
night.
Jez Goodwin, yeah.
I think it's Jez.
Yeah. Pronunciation's not ever been my strong suit.
Okay.
So Jez's sketchbooks show a whole bunch of artwork for Howling Banshees from back in the day, and this is now we've now caught at a point where the technology's caught up where he can actually have those models produced, which you couldn't do in metal way back in the day. There's a variant shuriken pistol in her hand now, which is the third variation we've seen of this weapon, but it's a nice streamlined version. I've seen people saying it's definitely a bloke, but you can see this sculpted breastplate there. It's just that the angle of the photo's blocking her chest. I've seen people say she looks super fat, but again, there's something clearly on her left hip, or on her right hip from our left-hand side, that's making her waist seem quite wide. She's also got a very arched spine, which is compressing her waist on one side, which makes her look a bit plump.
Heaven forbid.
I know. It's shocking, isn't it? I really love the style of the sword.
I do like the sword.
The mask and the helmet's all a throwback to the original design with hints of the most recent design. I've seen people criticize the feet because it's got that sort of split toe design that's very common in a lot of the Asian martial arts style cultures, which is obviously where these draw a lot of their inspiration from.
All right. So enough of the negative. What have you seen it praised for?
I love these models because...
No, not just you, other people.
I was about to say, because a lot of people are in the same boat as I am, is that these are the models that we wanted Games Workshop to produce from the style that is kind of an amalgamation of Jez's designs over the years. So it doesn't have any hints to the third edition sculpts, which is really interesting. But those sculpts also, from my understanding, weren't done by Jez. They were done by a different sculptor. So...
So did he leave and come back?
No, I believe he was just on other projects at the time.
Okay.
So I really, really love the new style. And then 2 days ago, we got the next Psychic Awakening, which is the sort of the first part of the prophecy and hints about what's going to happen in Campaign Book 1. But more importantly, we got the X-Arch for the same range. So again, we got the split-toe design. We got the sort of the sashes and all the dingly dangly bits. Again, people have complained that she looks fat, but again, I think there's a lot going on her waist at the moment. I really love the helmet style. Like, I'm a big fan of that. Now, what's even more interesting is they gave us an alternate version. Now, this is where all the controversies come from, because the core model's the same. The arms are different because it's got the alternate weapon option, which is great. But the amount of people that say this looks like a man.
Oh, yeah. No, it does.
It does.
100%. Because it actually looks like somebody who sponsored us for show. When I first saw it, I was like, oh.
Now, what's interesting about it is, firstly, I think part of its issue is the way it's painted. It's painted brilliantly, but they've really emphasized the lines sort of from the nose that run and separate your cheek from your mouth. They're really dark in that sort of definition, which makes it look more masculine. But more interestingly, Games Workshop came out on, I think it was a Twitter feed, and went, no, it's a dude.
Okay.
And that didn't go down well with anyone, because why has he got boob plate?
Okay, I'm going to just point this out. Some of the people who come to our events have bigger boobs than me.
Well, I'm actually going to put it into the lore, into the story, that Eldar don't do gender the way people do. And it's been a very common thing that's been noted that the Howling Banshee's armor is always feminine because it represents the spirit of the Banshee, the female spirit of vengeance. So when men get the call to become Banshees, that's the armor.
Yeah.
And because it's psycho-reactive, it can fit them, it expands and suits their style, but it's still a feminine aspect of the war god. So their armor is representative of that. So I have no problems with this as a style. And ultimately, it's a head swap. If you don't like the head, put the friggin' helmet on. Like, it's the same model with a different helmet. Like, if you don't like that face, put the helmet on.
I think it's a really cool... I think the face looks really awesome.
It's an amazing sculpt, and I'm really looking forward to...
The paint job's fantastic, obviously.
Oh, it's, you know, the heavy metal studio.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it does look... Yeah,
it is a masculine style face. What was interesting is if you Google like Ronda Rousey, who's a well-known MMA fighter and wrestler these days, if you Google her and you look at her photos when she's doing photo shoots and stuff, despite
the intimidation type photos.
No, I'm talking about the ones where she's on the catwalk or she's doing those sorts of things, where she's dressed nicely, she's got all her makeup done and all the rest of it, she looks really feminine. You forget the fact that she is, a brick shit house, for lack of a better description. Like,
I think we should probably get a better description.
She's muscled, she's strong, she's fit, and she doesn't fit that whole stereotypical catwalk figure.
Yeah.
And then you go to her photos when she's actually fighting in the ring, and look at how, or when she's yelling in a movie and those sorts of things, and you look at the facial expression, this isn't actually that far off.
Yeah.
It's an aggressive face. So I think the sculpt is really good, and it's really good to see Games Workshop going, no, the Banshee aspect is female. That doesn't mean the Eldar don't see gender that way, so we've got a bloke wearing a suit. Much the same way that I'm hopeful that we get when we get the other plastic aspects, that we will get a female head on something that would be more traditionally considered a male aspect, like a Scorpion or a Dark Reaper, to show the fact that she doesn't need boobs because their armor doesn't care. It's a ritual costume, not a...
Yeah.
You know, not anything related to gender. But I really like the
model. I think that's okay if the law's already there.
It is.
Like, I wouldn't want them to be creating a female head for the sake of it.
No,
you know, like, for example, if you go something like Thousand Suns.
Female Space Marine.
Yeah.
I think the fact that this has been established for decades, that the Eldar don't care. Male and female is a reproductive thing, and that's it. So what they choose to do in their lives is not dictated by their gender. Mm. So I really like the exploration of that in miniature form. And like I say, if you don't like the male head, don't put it on. Put the female, like, put the helmeted on and move
on. You don't know what's underneath it.
Or just do a head swap. Like, I'm sure that this kit, looking at the way that hair sits on the back of the helmet around the neck brace, I can't be certain, but I think that the hair is all one sort of component.
Yeah, so that's what I thought it looked like.
So it looks like the head and the helmet is going to be the swap over.
Yeah, yeah.
And that'll be a piece of cake to swap over with a plastic head if you really want to.
If it means that much to you.
Yeah. I really like it. I'm very keen to see what the rest of the... We've obviously only seen two models. We've also seen some previews from Psychic Awakening Book 1, which include rules for the Banshees. You know, we're going to get back Exarch powers, which you can change. And the variant Exarch also mentions that the reason it doesn't have a mask on is it's actually an Inari Exarch.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to get expanded rules for Inari for cool. different aspects, which is interesting as well. So I'm very keen to see what all sort of pours out of that new book. And it's Eldar, so I'll be there with bells on.
Mm.
Sadly for Emma.
Mm. When's it out?
They haven't given us a date yet. They've just been previewing it. I can't imagine. My guess would be by November.
That's what I'm hoping.
For my birthday?
Yeah. If it could come out late November, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I'm assuming it'll either be late November, early December for Christmas.
That's okay. I'll get you a gift voucher.
Anyway, so we've had a bunch of releases. It's been really interesting watching over the last couple of days the polarization of some of the community over some of these releases. Shrike did it. And now the Eldar are doing it as well.
And we know that happens, and it's completely fine to have differing opinions. Just do it in a polite way that doesn't involve being degrading or name-calling or personalizing. People are allowed different opinions.
Yeah, and disagreement with those opinions is also fine.
Yep.
But
providing you
name-calling and all the other rest of it is just not okay.
Respect is really underrated.
Yeah, absolutely, particularly online where it's easy to...
I actually just think in general at the moment, respect is really underrated.
Yeah, okay. I'll go with that.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's kind of what's been going on over the last week or two. We've also got a Crags 40K and AOS event coming up this weekend. Not us. Obviously, the guys at Crags are running it.
Well, our state has one coming up.
So they're running both side by side. I'm not getting to play this weekend, sadly, because of other commitments, but we wish all the guys and girls going the best of luck.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a couple of the teams from Perth with reps who are playing on the weekend for 40K. So good luck to everyone who's playing. Enjoy the weekend.
Good luck to Crags for a fantastic, fun and successful event.
Yes. I think that's it for the moment, though.
Oh, tickets are still available for that, aren't they?
For 40K, they are, yes, I believe.
Mm-hmm. So hit up anyone from Crags and find
out.
Jump on
the Crags Facebook page.
So that's Sunday the 15th down at Thomas Kelly Pavilion.
I actually think it's Saturday. Oh, no, it is Sunday. It is Sunday.
I know. I'm on it.
All right, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back to talk
game, jabber on a bit more
gaming clubs and teams and so on.
And we're back.
Since we're doing things differently. So Emma can do the intros for the segments this one around.
It's only because I make fun of Mike because he starts everyone going, "Welcome to the object." And it
I don't know. I can. I don't know. I can just
single
that,
time.
Yeah, that volume is going to be there, guys. I can't do anything about that. Look, we're going to talk about what we've seen. We've been involved in the community here in Western Australia now for nearly 20 years.
Oh yeah, 5 years is OBSEC.
5 years is OBSEC, and we've seen a lot of clubs. Over the years, we've seen teams start to emerge and different gaming nights and hobby nights and things happening. So we thought it might be interesting to cover that. If you're looking at starting a club, what we've experienced, what we might have seen with some of the teams that have started popping up to play games as a group, and talk about what we've seen work and what, you know, maybe hasn't worked as well.
Yeah, so I think we talk in a lot of the podcasts that we do around how important it is to actually get out and play the game.
Mm.
So part of what we're going to talk about today is where you can actually get out and play the game.
Yeah, because, you know, it's really easy to get bogged down in building and painting. And when we say the game, we're not talking specifically 40K. We're talking any tabletop game or board game, for that matter, or role-playing game.
Yeah.
Because most of the clubs around Perth cater to a number of different things.
Mm-hmm.
And our events, particularly show, cater to all of that. So, you know, my first suggestion is supporting local gaming clubs.
Yeah, so Mike was out at Varsity on Monday night and there was someone who came along from one of the gaming communities who said, you know, we've seen stores closing down and we've just recently lost another store. If people don't start supporting, you know, events like going out to Varsity or clubs, things like that, we're going to see those close down as well. So, yeah, supporting local clubs is a great way to start.
Yeah, I mean, obviously supporting stores in the same way is just as important. But
definitely.
The difference between a store and a club is that the club, generally they're not-for-profit.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, the only revenue they get is from memberships and from people actually turning up at the club.
That's it. Membership, door, entry, drinks and snacks and
the occasional raffle.
Raffles and then the events they host. And it's often, so we know how expensive it is to hire venues around WA.
Yep.
It's ridiculous. It's often the events that they run that they need to make a profit on in order to supplement the income
to pay for the club nights. Yeah.
So if they're not getting the attendance for events either, then I guess the future of gaming in WA is potentially
under
in
threat.
Jeopardy.
Yeah. I mean, just the fact that they have to, you know, there's obviously insurances that have to be paid, there's bonds and higher fees for the venues, not to mention all the terrain and boards and sort of infrastructure that you need to host a club.
Mm-hmm.
And that all costs money.
Yep.
And I know there's been clubs, I mean, Outpost South opened in 2002, when myself and Bob Gray took it upon ourselves to open a second branch of that club south of the river, because the other one, Outpost 6030, originated up in Mindari, which is 1 million miles from where we are. Maybe not 1 million, but it was a good hour and a half drive back then, because the freeway didn't go there and none of the highways went there.
Yeah.
So we opened a branch of it south of the river, and that was kind of the first exposure I'd had to, you know, the club essentially giving us funds to go and get the bare minimum off the ground. So we bought 10 6x4 tabletops, plus we bought the green paint to paint them all.
Two tones of green paint, so we could roller them they
only paid for the roller green. We had to find the craft paint for the dark green.
Yeah.
And then we got their throw-off dregs terrain to kick us off.
Mm-hmm.
And then as the club branch started making money, we were able to invest some of that money to get more terrain. And, you know, we had a whole bunch of really awesome members who are still members to this day who donated stuff to make sure that we had terrain.
Made out of pipe cleaners.
Yep. Shout out to Adrian for that. So, you know, the gaming clubs invariably start with someone who's passionate about, you know, giving the community a place to play with some regularity. And often in other parts of the world, that is a gaming store. In Perth, the real estate prices for hiring a space that will let you put 10 tables up are high.
Yes.
So independent clubs using local halls and churches is fairly common, and it has been now for nearly two decades.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are looking at, you know, going down that road, you know, not just having a group of friends who are playing in your backyard, you really have to engage the community really heavily and make sure that everyone's on the same page. A lot of that starts, though, like it did with Bob and I, with a group of mates playing at home and wanting to be part of the wider community, but not having any way of doing so. And in the past, what, 2 years now, we've seen, I'm trying to figure out when the cartel formed here in WA. I want to say it was 2 years ago.
It was just before the first show.
So 2017.
Mm.
So we had the Toy Soldier Cartel as a team of players playing specifically Warhammer 40,000, get together with matching T-shirts, and, you know, they meet regularly to play games together. They hang out together. They do barbecues. They're starting to branch out and hosting public events,
mm-hmm.
Which is, I suppose, the natural progression, which is what Bob and I did years ago with Outpost. And then off the back of them sort of forming this group, we've now seen, I don't know what it is, but the cartel has spawned the Mafia and the Yakuza.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got the Hobby Yakuza, which is all one word. And we've got the Tabletop Mafia.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fourth sort of officially formed group is the Snake Eye Squad, which, do you know, I didn't realize what that stood for until like day two of WATC.
Isn't it rolling two ones?
Yeah, two ones. I did not put that together.
Really?
You know.
How many times have we been to Vegas?
I know. Well, how many games do I play?
Well, there is that.
It took, like, I walked past the banner because they've got this awesome banner they took to WATC of a giant snake, and it's got two dice underneath it. And I went, Snake Eye Squad, oh, it's a giant snake. I wonder why they call it that. And then I've actually looked at the logo and gone, there's two dice there, and then there's two ones. Oh, I get it now. And
oh my God, yeah, you dork.
I was very busy those 2 days. And
it's not the first time that... Oh.
It's the first time I'd seen the banner, and I've never looked at... Like, the logo, I think that was kind of the first team shirts, team logo day for them.
Yeah, but they've had the name for...
I never made the connection. Completely oblivious. So... So now we've now got sort of four organized teams of 6 to 8 players,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, will generally see between two and four, two and five at most events around Perth, depending on where that event is and obviously the timing for those events.
Mm-hmm. And some of those are more open groups and some of them are invitation only groups, but.
And, yeah. You know, these are people who game regularly, who hang out, who. You know,
encourage each other to actually play.
Yeah.
And to get out to events or to, you know, come and participate in regular gaming.
What's interesting as well is I think in a lot of cases it starts as people who... WATC has actually been the impetus for a couple of these teams because they've wanted to come and play the team event, haven't had a team, so they've joined other teams, made friends, and then that friendship has spawned... You know, obviously, when you've got teams where guys who live nearby, it's easy.
Yeah.
I know in the case of Snake Eyes, they live all over Perth. Mm. So it's not like they're around the corner from each other and can play regularly. It's about...
Actually making the effort to get together. Yeah.
So that's really positive for, your social life and your mental health. And
it's sort of one step up from a couple of mates playing in a garage.
Yeah.
You know, to being something slightly more formal where you're actually making a concerted effort to play regularly, but also play outside of just in your garage or your living room or that kind of thing.
And it also encourages a little bit of cross-pollination with the club. It creates some friendly rivalries, and it has been friendly rivalries. you know, it's a scenario where there's a bit of pride on the line. You know, you've got people there actively encouraging you and your hobby and what you're doing and what your learnings, whether that's with a paintbrush or on the table. I think it's actually been a relatively positive influence on whole parts of the Western Australian community having these organized teams with their own logos and their own Facebook pages. And I know that most of the teams have only just gotten dice together.
Yeah.
They'd ordered them for WATC and they showed up like in the last couple of days. But
we know what that's like.
Oh, all too well. Mm. Except they got theirs 2 weeks after the event, not 6 months. but they didn't order 10,000. So
there is that.
You know, I think the that social connection that creates with the hobby, it gives you another friendship circle.
Yeah.
You know, you've got your family, then you've got your work colleagues, and then you'll often have one or two different groups of friends. In the case of couples, it's his friends and her friends sometimes. Having another social group to, you know, give you space, let you do something that...
You're quite a social person.
I am, yeah.
So some people don't have that. So I, because of my role at work, I don't have work friends. I don't hang out with work people.
No, you're the boss.
That's it. So I am friendly with people at work, but I don't have work friends. And yes, we do have our family, obviously, but some people don't have that. And some people actually don't have, they have really limited social connections. And this month is obviously Suicide Awareness Month. And we know that lack of social connection and lack of a feeling of belonging can really impact negatively on people's mental health. And that's one of the big risk factors for suicide. So I guess the protective factors against suicide are actually feeling like you belong. So as well as what you're speaking about, having the social connection that comes with gaming, it's also, so when we first started Objective Secured and we ran our very first Masters, somebody did come and speak to me probably a year after and said, you know, I attempted suicide just before Masters and I was unsuccessful. And I'm really pleased because for the first time in my life, I feel like I fit. So we've been living in a time where it's becoming more socially acceptable to be a gamer, but there's also stigma attached to it as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So I wonder whether or not this is part of why there aren't that many female gamers, because it actually takes a lot of courage to admit that you're a gamer at times because of the connotations that can come from that.
Absolutely. It's funny you say that because the Varsity Project, Morley, that we've done four sessions at now of a monthly club meeting. I say club meeting, it's not a club necessarily, but it's a meeting. You know,
it's our version of a club night.
Yep. We've seen people walk through and sneer and, you know, I sort of just make sure they move through the space that we're in.
And I get it a lot of times from, I have a small group of friends that I used to dance with and they are lovely people, but they really not supportive at all for what I'm doing with OBSEC.
No.
Because it's gaming.
Yeah.
And so if you've experienced that, it takes a lot of courage to actually tell people that you game.
Mm.
And so trying to find other people to play with is difficult if you don't want to admit that you actually play.
Well, on Monday just gone, so September 2019, we had four guys rough around the edges, walk through outside to have a smoke, and we use that back area to bring all the tables and terrain and stuff in. And I sort of followed them out to move some of the boards and stuff that we'd put on the tables to give them the space. Mm. And they said, oh, you know, what's going on here? And it was that very ochre sort of stereotypical tone. And I went, oh, here we go. I said, oh, you know, the guys are playing tabletop games. And one of the guys went, oh, like World of Warcraft. I went, well, sort of, yeah. He's gone, oh, I've just started playing WoW again. And one of the other guys there is going, oh, yeah, you know, me too. And two of the other guys are kind of looking on going, what? And then by sort of, they asked some questions and they went and had a look at the models. And by sort of a half an hour of time around them, they're there going like, we're fly in, fly out. They're based out in Kalgoorlie, I think they said. Mm. And you know, it's like, oh, cool. Like, I used to play, one of the guys has come out with, I used to play Warhammer when I was a kid. The guy's 20.
so last week.
Yeah. but it was really interesting.
It's a sign of our age and not his. That is true. Anyway.
But it was really interesting listening to them, the conversation change, where they're going, like, this is awesome. This looks amazing.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily interested in joining in, but the fact
then
that...
Then you didn't sell well enough, did you? You should have pushed.
Oh, no. One of the dudes spent his last $20 on the last round of beers for him and his mates. but, you know, these guys... I was expecting some sort of confrontation from them, but the fact that a couple of them were already playing online computer games in a similar genre, and one of them had played tabletop as a youngster, it meant that conversation went a very different way to what I was expecting.
And
it just showed, like 10 years ago, that wouldn't have happened. That conversation wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, I don't... The thing is that there isn't any such thing as a stereotypical gamer.
Absolutely
anymore.
Absolutely not.
And I'm sure we've done an episode on that, but I don't know. I should remember. We need to have a list of all the episodes we've covered.
Yeah.
So, but there isn't such thing as a stereotypical gamer anymore.
No, not at all.
And so the hard part with that is you don't know who... You can't recognise like for like and go, oh, well, he looks like he probably play, you know.
And that's what I said to the guys that night. I said, we have guys who are fly in, fly out, miners. We have geologists. Everything in the mining sector is involved. In some way, shape, or form, we have doctors, nurses, police, armed forces, I should say. Mm-hmm. We have gymnast teachers. We have
unemployed people, students.
Yep, students, you name it,
yeah.
Involved in the hobby. And like I said to these guys, it's just a case of it's another part of their lives. And they come out and play toy soldiers occasionally, and you know they'll go and take their kids to dance recitals, and they'll go out to nightclubs and all the rest of that stuff. It's just this is another part of their life.
Yeah.
And I think in years gone by, people wouldn't have recognised that. And I think that between the stores and the clubs that are more visible, I think it helps the community a lot because it takes away some of those
preconceived notions. And it certainly helps when you've got people like Vin Diesel coming out and saying that he plays
D&D.
D&D and things like that. That certainly helps.
Oh, there's a whole host of the celebrity.
Yeah, no, he was just the first one that popped into mind.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Well, he's certainly not your stereotypical gamer,
no,
is he?
No, he's definitely not. Yeah, Robin Williams was an avid collector while he was with us, and there's a whole host of celebrities who have done... Terry Crews did a D&D video stream, like Vin Diesel had done.
I don't know who that is.
You don't know who Terry Crews is?
No. Oh.
He's in Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Well, I don't watch that, so that...
Expendables?
Did watch that.
Okay.
Anyway.
I'll have to make sure there's a Terry Crews picture in the show notes for this episode now.
Did we have a point when we went down that little rabbit hole? Where were we?
All about it. Like, my point is that you're right. The stereotypical gamer does not exist anymore.
Hmm.
They are husbands and wives and partners and CEOs and all walks of life.
Yeah.
What they get out of it might be different.
Not living in their mum's basement drinking Mountain Dew with a car.
At age 35, like. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think the clubs and the stores have done a lot to help that, but also the mainstream media in the form of like Marvel, with Marvel Comics movies and so on, have helped take a lot of that traditionally basement-dwelling culture and pull it
into
mainstream. So, you get less stigma, which is good for your mental health because then you're not hiding what you do.
Hmm.
And that can be really easy trap to fall into, particularly at work or at school, where you don't want to be the weirdo. You don't want to be the one playing with toy soldiers as a grown adult, which unfortunately that stigma still does exist, particularly in...
100%. And I'm going to be honest, it doesn't matter what license I apply for, I will, whether it's a liquor license or... you know, licensing for any of the event, doesn't matter. If I put in an application and I write on it tabletop wargaming, and they will ring me up and say, we're just wondering, what is it exactly?
Yeah.
And, oh, like for insurance, all that kind of stuff. And every single time I will describe it as, so basically it's grown men playing with toy soldiers. Because it's not like, and I don't say that to be rude or disrespectful or disparaging in any way. It's just the easiest way to describe it.
Yeah.
That's essentially what it is. Or if you imagine chess, but sort of with toy soldiers and on a much bigger scale, and you have to roll dice to decide if you can move and where you can move and how successful your move is. Does that make sense? Oh, yeah. No, that's... Yeah, I can get that. So...
We're not quite full mainstream yet.
Not yet. But so that can actually make it quite tricky if you don't have a great social circle to have people to play with.
Yeah. So reaching out into your local, whether it's Facebook or Instagram or wherever social media connections you do have, and looking for a local club can be a really great way of expanding that social circle and being involved in, you know, your hobby in a broader sense.
Yeah, and we're really lucky in Perth. We've actually got quite a few different clubs, and they're quite diverse as well.
So well, that's it. So the longest one that still does tabletop games, because I believe the Gamers Guild of Perth predates Outpost 6030. However, the Gamers Guild of Perth is now basically just role-playing games. Outpost 6030... South Branch opened in 2002. I can't be certain when North Branch opened, but I believe it was 18 months. I'd been to Mindari at least once or twice prior to that.
I want to say it was... About 2000.
Yeah, 18 months, 2 years maybe, prior to Outpost South opening. We have...
So, I've got a list. I'm going to go through them. So, obviously, we have Offset Gaming Nights at Varsity, which are open to all sorts of...
We bring a whole bunch of different terrain and boards and you come and play. We had Warcry, Kill Team, Age of Sigmar, 40K, Age of Sigmar, Kill Team, Warcry, 40K. We've had Titanicus. We've had Underworlds. We've had War Machine. Like, we've had a whole bunch of different game systems over the four months we've done it so far.
So it's open to everything. And it was way back when we started OBSEC, my goal was to get this happening because what I wanted was basically beer and pizza and gaming nights.
So this is beer and burgers.
Yeah.
They do pizzas though, I discovered.
I'm going to call that close enough. Goal achieved.
And we have to say thank you to Caleb and the team at Varsity Project Morley for giving us the opportunity to come and set up, and for the support they've given us. Luke and the team were amazing on Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you very much to Caleb and Varsity.
Next. Okay, so that's Varsity out in Morley. And we
Varsity Project Morley.
Third Monday
Say that, because this was the first... Well, this was the first Monday of the month. Second Monday of the month.
All right. I think it might be the second Monday of every month. Okay, it's one Monday of the month and we tend to post about it. Next is...
We're going to try and lock that down shortly.
Good. Next is Outpost. So as you were saying, they're one of the longest running. So I think the OBSEC Gaming Nights is one of the youngest.
It qualifies as the youngest, yep.
But Outpost is one of the oldest. So they're running at South Perth Community Hall, which is in obviously South Perth. And they run on a Tuesday evening, most Tuesdays.
Yeah, it's the corner of Southgate and
South Terrace.
Sandgate Street and South Terrace.
Yeah. And again, that's open to any and all gaming.
Yeah. If anything, they've had more games variety, particularly in the last few years. The constitution for that club was originally all about Games Workshop games.
Yeah.
And sometime, I want to say, I don't think I was president. It might have been just after I was president.
Yeah.
Where it became an open to all gaming things. So they do Malifaux, they do X-Wing, they do Infinity, they do any game that's on the table, bolt action, skirmish games, you name it.
Mm. Do they do board games and role-playing games?
I've seen a couple of board games being played, things like Blackstone Fortress and HeroQuest.
Yeah.
There was a guy who had a 3D printed HeroQuest board there at the last night I went to, which was amazing. I've seen people bring board games.
Yeah.
Role playing's a bit harder at a club night because the clubs in Perth are only open for those sort of 3 hour windows, 2 to 3 hour windows, and that can make an RPG session a little bit tricky. That doesn't mean no one's tried it.
I was going to say, I don't know that they would turn you away.
I don't think so either. I think they'd be quite happy to let you come in and play. I think the constitution for Outpost requires models.
Take a model for your RPG.
Well, that's it, yeah. It's been a long time since I looked at the Constitution, but I believe that when they changed it from Games Workshop product to gaming product, the specification in the Constitution includes it. It has to have miniatures. Mm-hmm. So you couldn't go in and play Risk, for example, because that uses cardboard tokens.
Yeah.
So you'd have, like, whereas Blackstone Fortress and HeroQuest are miniatures based.
Yeah.
But I could be wrong. I don't know what the Constitution says right now.
Okay. Next up on my list is Crags.
The Quinana, Rockingham, Armchair, Generals.
Society.
So I think it's Society.
So they meet at the Thomas Kelly Pavilion on a Friday evening.
Yep.
And they are also a club that's open to everything.
Yep.
I know they have a range of board games down there as well.
Yes, they do.
It's absolutely massive, the hall that they... Well, so is South Perth. So Outpost and Crags both have a really large venue.
Outpost recently have been doing sort of shit there, and they've just published some stuff to us privately, which we won't share because we haven't got their permission to.
Why did you bring it up?
Because it feeds into what Crags have been doing for a little while now, which is regularly scheduled nights if you play a specific game.
Yeah.
So where Outpost don't have that, they have a league or something for specific games running in conjunction with other games that they host. Crags do the same, but they also do like a... So 1 week it will be 40K League, 1 week will be Age of Sigmar League, 1 week will be Malifaux, 1 will be X-Wing, whatever it happens to be. And then at the end of the year, they attach a tournament to the end of it.
Yeah.
Whereas the Outpost guys will do a 12-week Necromunda campaign, for example, or an 8-week or whatever it is, and it'll be every week
for eight weeks.
So each with a different, you know, each has its pros and cons.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things that Outpost have started doing is they have like a game of the week or game of the month. So there's somebody there who can actually intro and demo that game. So.
Yeah, like Callum was for Kings of War.
Yes. Okay, so Crags, you just talked about their leagues that they run over the year, and then they do the
and then they do the Tournament of Champions
at the end. I'd crit that is up in Naranda. I can't necessarily remember exactly where the reserve is, other than it's a reserve on an oval and there's some toilets outside. Might not narrow that down for you.
We'll have a link in the show notes for you.
We should really put links to all of these clubs on our website. I'd crit that. It's a little bit different to Crags and Outpost in that it has a really different kind of emphasis. So Crags and Outpost, they're gaming clubs. And I'd crit that is as well.
I would call it a hobby club.
Yeah.
Because I've seen guys at that club building and painting models, and
I've seen people do that at Crags and Outpost as well, though.
Yeah, but because I'd crit that is open on the Sunday.
Yeah.
And they're open for longer than...
It is all day, yeah.
Yeah, so it gives you that opportunity to go and do like a day's worth of hobby, whether that includes games or painting or building or a combination thereof.
I think I've only been to I'd crit that 3 or 4 times, but the times when I have been there, it's been more of a social hangout type thing, which it's also been smaller groups. So it's potentially a little bit less intimidating to walk into, but there's less emphasis on tournaments and more emphasis on
narrative and hobby-driven stuff.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, George, if I did a terrible job of actually trying to define and describe that. Then Rockingham Historical Gamers is also a relatively new one. So they meet out on a Saturday at Rockingham Good Games.
Yep.
And obviously Historical Gamers, it's about historical games.
Bolt Action, Flames of War...
Wings of Glory, Conflict.
Yeah, there's a whole host of historical games that aren't necessarily a defining part of what we are active within.
Mm.
But the guys who are involved, particularly in the Bolt Action community, are really passionate about the game, are really active, and create these amazing boards.
Oh my goodness, their boards are fantastic.
So it's really positive to see those sorts of clubs with that slant back in the mix.
Mm-hmm. And then still on that sort of historical gaming, but and I really hope that I'm getting this right. I sort of, when I think about Rockingham, I tend to think that that's more around sort of the World War II type timeline.
Right.
Whereas Perth Miniature Gaming Group and Napoleonic Wargaming Society include some of that World War II stuff, but they also go all the way back to Napoleonic.
And prior.
Yes.
So we've, you know, I've seen them with sort of the Zulu style black powder, early black powder stuff happening. Yeah. I've seen Charlemagne, and you know, going back to the Middle Ages,
and also gaming systems, particularly in Napoleonic wargaming, gaming systems that they've created themselves.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of guys who, you know, kit bash a rule set essentially.
Yeah.
And some again, we were at the Perth, the one in Melville.
Yeah, that's Perth Miniature Gaming Group.
Yep. And
so that's at the how do you pronounce it? Rain Donu Club? I did not pronounce that right.
And you're having a go at me earlier. We'll put a link to the location as well in the show notes. One of the guys there had a cavalry army, and he'd researched all the heraldry for the knights of that era and then painted the knights in the right colours with the right household emblems on their shields and on their banners. And the level of attention to detail was absolutely amazing to behold. And I think that that anyone in that sort of historical category always has a passion for history, and some of them will look at the basic colour schemes for World War II, for example, for bolt action, and make sure that the American green is the right green.
And
then others will go along and make sure that the platoon markings with the unit markings and the
camouflage is exactly the right shades of each of the colours with the pattern that's exactly right. And
for
it's
the
all
era.
To scale. And
Because I've seen a few where I've seen like Tiger Tanks or Shermans and those sorts of things, and I go, oh, I love the camouflage. Oh, that's the camouflage they used in this theatre of war between 1940 this and 1940 this.
Of the months, July to...
And they changed it when this happened because of this, and you go, oh my gosh.
Yeah, and all done to... Yeah, like I said, done to scale, which just blows my mind. So both of those two groups meet on a Wednesday night. One, as we said,
one north of the river, one south of the river.
And then Napoleonic Wargaming Society meet at the Perth Lawn Bowls Club in North Perth.
Yes.
Fab, I'm looking at you going, oh, I'm stretching my memory here. Perth Nerd Herd have a gaming kind of group together type thing on a Saturday morning just down here in Armidale, corner of Albany Highway and Southwest Highway.
Yep.
At Phoenix Gym there. And then you mentioned Gamers Guild earlier, which I have been there a couple of times and have no idea where it is because you drove.
And it was nice.
It's next to Cyril Jackson High School. I don't know what suburb that is.
All the links for the clubs will be in the show notes where we've got them.
Yeah. So Gamers Guild is... So I'll just go off tangent a little bit. The first time I went to Gamers Guild, so you drove... And there were like literally, there were cars everywhere and there were people
queued around the block.
And they'd got food vans. I'm like, oh my goodness, I did not know that role-playing games was this popular. There are people queued up to get in to play role-playing games. No, there were six guys in there playing role-playing games and WrestleMania was on in the room next door. So they were queued up waiting to go into WrestleMania. And when I went and asked the people for WrestleMania, hey, do you know where Gamers Guild is? They had no idea what Gamers Guild was, and I was explaining role-playing games, blank looks, no idea.
I don't think they even knew that they were in the adjoining room.
No, they didn't.
Yeah. No, the Gamers Guild is probably one of the oldest. I want to say it is older than Outpost, but I can't be certain.
Yeah, I don't know either, but I know that it's evolved.
I know it existed when Outpost did. Yeah. Whether it started after Outpost or not, I can't be sure. If anyone knows, please feel free to comment and let us know. Because I want to say that they established themselves somewhere in the very late 90s or early 2000s. Mm. And they were originally, like I said earlier, about all forms of gaming. Yeah. And these days, their focus is now primarily role-playing games.
Yeah.
If you know of any other clubs in Perth,
I mean,
let us know.
There are other places that people play. So we know that Good Games in Cannington has different nights where people are...
Playing different things, and obviously card games as well.
Yeah. Then obviously your Games Workshop stores do different things on different nights as well.
Yep.
Well, down at Beyond Games
in
and
Bunbury.
Hobby down in Bunbury, they do obviously club nights and RPG and card games.
Tactics do the odd, they do a lot of board game tournaments and those sorts of things.
Yeah.
Tactics, again, has been an institution in gaming in Western Australia for as long as I'm... aware of gaming in WA, 30 plus years now.
Yeah.
How long they were there before I knew about them, I have no idea.
Mm.
But they're also one of the biggest gaming stores anywhere in terms of their range and
what they
cater to.
Anywhere that I've forgotten with that list?
You've got, what's the one at Midland? Quenda Games in Midland.
Mm-hmm.
A huge space.
Yes.
Again, role-playing, tabletop. It's probably more slanted towards role-playing at the moment. They do a lot of Adventurers League for D&D.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's plenty of different places around Perth. So if you are visiting Western Australia for a holiday or for work and you want to get some hobby on, check out the show notes. You can hit up any of the groups there that we have links to, or you can Google any of the names we've referenced.
Yep.
And you should be able to find someone to hang out with and game with for a night or two while you're here without too much of a struggle.
And as you said before, if you're part of another gaming group club that we haven't mentioned,
let us know.
Let us know, because it's always good.
I'm sure we've forgotten or missed someone.
Yeah, I'm just thinking. I know that there's one in the there's Karatha tabletop and
there's
PAX
also Peel.
And,
yep.
I'm going to be honest.
Kalgoorlie have one as well. The Albany Boys.
Oh, Albany.
Albany Tabletop Gaming.
Yeah, Albany.
Elandril Games, I think, is the store down there.
Yeah, but they, Albany don't play it.
They do a bit now. Yep. So Geraldton have a gaming community as well.
Albany Tabletop Gamers, they've
got a Facebook page that we'll have.
They have a Facebook page. I think it's a Saturday and they play a range of different games as well. I know they do.
There's card
games and...
There's a lot of Games Workshop stuff because obviously the community is a lot smaller, being as remote as they are, comparatively speaking.
Say Albany's not remote.
The 4.5 hours from Perth, and we are the most remote capital city in the Western world.
Yeah, but it's not a, it's not a petrol station and a roadhouse type remote, is it?
No, it's not.
I think they've got 3 petrol stations.
No, I mean in terms of it's a destination. It's not, if you're flying to Perth for a holiday or for work, the chances that you'll end up in Albany, unless it's a specific reason for hitting up Albany, is a tenuous one.
No, but if you live in...
You're going there for Race Wars and you're a gamer as well, head down and play a couple of games while you're down there.
Or if you live 20Ks out of Albany.
Yeah, Denmark, any of the surrounding country towns that are outside of the major centre that is Albany.
You can travel in and meet up with some other gamers. But yeah, really, it's just... I guess one of the things that we've been harping on about since we started OBSEC is that it's about community. And one of the downsides with online communities is that you don't necessarily get the best of people.
No. And the people that you know online, you may not ever socialise with in person.
No. So if you've been socialising with people from WA and you happen to be coming over here, coming to one of these clubs could be a good place to meet them.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, the online community can be really positive.
Can be awesome.
It's meant that when I've gone to events interstate or overseas, I've walked into those events, been able to send messages to people or organise a time before I get on the plane to go, hey, let's meet here.
Yeah.
And be able to instantly integrate into... and hang out with people and start building those personal relationships.
And it does allow you to meet people that you would never actually have an opportunity to meet.
Yeah.
So it can be fantastic, but it can also, I guess, there can be some negative stereotypes around the kind of people that you would meet at events and that kind of thing. And when you see people who are really opinionated and quite rude with their opinion and... disrespectful and name-calling because you have a different opinion to that, that can be quite isolating.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, whereas you're less likely to get that in person.
Yeah, I think a lot of the negativity you get online is only amplified because it's online.
Yeah.
You might get differing opinions in person, but I don't think you'd get the same language used a lot of the time.
I would hope not. But as I said, creating online community is fantastic and we do want to keep doing that. But we also want to encourage people to try and create an in-person network and community as well.
So if you don't think you've got the time and resources to do a gaming club, starting a gaming team is a great way of doing that because it lets you formalize a process. You can pool your resources with other people to make sure you've got the boards and you're playing the games that you all enjoy playing. it gives you a social connection with a group of people.
Mm.
And if you've got a group of 3 to 4, it's hard. When you've got sort of 6 to 8 is probably a good mix, because then when someone drops out because they've got family life or post-work commitments, or you've still got a group.
The group's still getting together.
Yeah.
And I was trying to work out, you know, what comes first, the chicken or the egg. So do you start with a couple of friends who you play with in your garage or your backyard, that kind of thing? Or do you start and then build that till you get to the point where you've got a gaming group like we have these, the four that we mentioned earlier? Or do you start by going to clubs in order to find like-minded people to create that with? Or, you know, so
I think it depends on where you are in the community.
Exactly, and it depends on your personality type. And
what access there is at the moment. Like if you, so let's take Fallon, Nevada with our friends from Five Titans.
Mm-hmm.
Their local store closed down.
Mm-hmm.
There was a big gaming population there. There's a military facility there as well with a bunch of, and we find a lot of military personnel involved in gaming.
Yes.
And he, along with a couple of his buddies, Joshua, decided, yep, we're gonna open a store.
Mm-hmm.
And they cater for everything. They do tabletop, they do board games, they do role-playing games, they do everything there. If you're in Fallon and you like one component of that, then you've now got a hub which does everything that you can then go and start generating that from. If on the other hand...
So when you said their local gaming club closed down...
Store.
Their local gaming store closed down... That's why Five Titans...
It now exists.
Exists, yeah. Because he
wanted to generate a community.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that it's not Five Titans that have closed down. It was the one prior to that.
Yep.
And because there's obviously a need there, Josh and the other guys at Five Titans have actually tried to fill that need.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've done a great job of it so far.
Mm.
So if you've got a situation where you've got a local store that caters to that sort of stuff, getting involved in the local events... in some way, shape or form, or just hanging out at the store and playing games there and supporting the store will often give you access to the community to then start looking to build friendships and those connections.
Yeah.
If, on the other hand, you live... And I know there's plenty of places in Europe that don't have local stores, or the local stores, even in America, 2-3 hours away, then you're kind of in a bind.
In what way?
Because you're left in a position where if you've just moved to this town, for example, and you're already a gamer...
Mm-hmm.
How do you find people in that town that game? And what happens if you don't have anyone in the town that games?
And I guess that's one of the good things about online and social media.
Yeah.
Is that it really is connecting people all over. And, you know, you jump into, say you play Elder. I know it's a hard stretch for you to imagine. But jump into an online Elder group and go, hey, I'm moving to...
X, Y, or Z.
Denmark in WA.
Yeah.
Does anybody happen to know anybody who plays 40K there? Then you're going to get 6 people respond and go, hey, did you know about
Albany.
Did you know about Albany Tabletop Gamers? Because they meet and...
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll be able to get a game in there.
Even like Googling the state or capital city that you're moving near to can often give you connections to someone. Like if you're moving to Harvey here in Western Australia, going to Warhammer 40,000 Players Perth on Facebook, will at least give you, hey, I'm moving to this town. Can anyone start? And you'll find the pool of knowledge there will inevitably point you.
But I think that social media is probably a better place to look than, you said, Google will point you. I'm not sure as it will, because a lot of these clubs are run by...
that's true. Sometimes they don't have websites or...
Yeah.
But if they've got a Facebook page, Google will pick it up.
Okay, I haven't Googled in a really long time.
But I think the point of all that, though, is that when you're trying to put together your own little group, I think having... Like, obviously, you take what you can get. If you want a game and you want to hang out, and you've only got one army and the 3 other guys who you're hanging out with only have one army each... That's the way it is. Like, that's, you know, you
and
play games.
Completely fine.
Absolutely. Swapping armies can be a great way of spicing things up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you get to that sort of 6 to 8 player threshold, you start getting opportunities then to, hey, everyone, let's pitch in and get a new table so that we can all play. And if there's sort of 2 people out of the group who can host, so that if one's sick or has commitments, it can happen at the person's house. You start having a lot of resources available to you. You can start sharing list ideas and start planning for events. Hey, guys, I really want to go to, you know, this tournament or that tournament. Mm-hmm. Who's up for it? And it can make going to those sort of events easier as well, because you are going with a support network.
It's also not just about events.
No,
so
it's not.
So, yeah, I definitely agree that having that support network is fantastic. But we're not saying that you know, if you do this, then it's got to be all about the
events. No, but I'm saying if you choose to, then that's another benefit of this sort of...
I would certainly find it a lot easier walking into an event if I had three or four people that I knew that were also going to be there, as opposed to walking into a room of 100 people and not knowing anyone.
Well, when we organised the trip to LVO, so there were three of us from WA, one from South Australia, I think three from Queensland, and three from New South Wales.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect that I probably would have gone by myself regardless because
that kind of person.
I am that kind of person.
Yeah.
But I also knew, even though I'd never met some of the guys I knew in person, I knew that walking into LVO, me finding those people wouldn't have been a chore. Like, I would have been able to kind of go, all right, I know you guys are here. Jump on Facebook and find them.
That's so funny. I would have gone, oh no, they've got their own friends here and people who they know, and they've come with those. I don't want to interrupt. I don't want to disturb them. I'll just sit in a corner by myself.
No, I will quite happily go, right, where are you? What are we doing? And if they go and hang out and they don't invite me, that's fair enough. But that wouldn't faze me either, to be honest.
No.
Whereas I know a couple of the guys who came with us wouldn't have gone if I wasn't going. Because like you say, yeah, there's a bit of reservation around that sort of, I don't know anyone in the room.
Yeah.
So, whereas that doesn't bother me. That's a good thing for sometimes.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, have a think about whether you've got an opportunity to start getting together with a group of mates and turning it into something a little bit more. Often finding the right people.
Do you think we should have had this conversation like 3 months before WATC rather than
quite
after?
Possibly. But you know what? You've got 12 months till the next WATC.
This is true.
And
if you're in the eastern states or America or Europe or anywhere else listening to this, grab a group of friends, start getting together.
Fly to Perth for 2 days of 40K in August next year.
Perfect.
What's been really cool about most of these groups though is they often become more. They start as a group of, I'll use the word mates rather than friends, because you have mates that you hang out with for one part of your life and you get together to play games, and then you don't socialize outside of that. You don't, you know, it's one part of your social life. And a lot of the time I see those mates become friends where you now start sharing life experiences. You go to birthday parties and weddings, and you know it can often create lifelong friendships where you know your relationship changes and you still get to game, but when someone moves or someone stops gaming for whatever reason, you actually keep that connection, and that can be really good for you as well. So I get the reservations with trying to add new people to a group of friends because they are the new guy, they're the new personality. No, like it might be a friend of yours, but not anyone else's in the group, and that can be hard for the new person and for you and for everyone else for various different reasons. But I think that sometimes taking that chance will work and sometimes it won't, and either way it lets you develop as a community in and of itself.
So really what we're saying is for the sake of your mental health, it's really important to game more often, go to clubs, and then potentially work towards creating your own gaming group.
Now, because you've said that and not me, anyone who wants that specific part of the audio file, just send us an email and you can play that to your significant others. And that's not the gamer in the room saying that you should do all that. That's the woman with the qualifications in psych saying that you should go out and play more games. So anyone wants that, hit us up on the email obsec@optusnet.com.au and we will send you that 10-second audio bite. So, we'll leave that one there. Anyway, think about starting a club, starting a group, or just gaming more
starting
often.
Starting a club is a really big thing to suggest people think about.
Look, if there's a need for it in your community, there's no harm in exploring that option. We've done it once already, and we run events and we do everything. If you've got any questions or any thoughts you want to share with us about this topic,
hit up Outpost or Craigs.
look, I think any of the major clubs in WA are more than happy to share their experiences and ideas if, you know, if you're looking to become part of the community. I know that we all try and make sure that we don't conflict with each other in terms of, you know, the dates that we run things and the club nights that we run, you know, to try and make sure that, you know, if you can't game on a Tuesday night at Outpost, but you can game on a Friday, then Crags is an opportunity for you, or Napoleonic Wargaming in, you know, North Perth on a Wednesday night. There's a lot of attempts to try and avoid crossover.
Yeah.
And I think being considerate of the rest of the community is a really big part of that as well. So, yeah, it's all about community. It's all about making everyone's life better and obviously getting more out of your gaming.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll leave it there.
Good plan.
And we'll be back to wrap up the episode in just a second.
And we're back.
Emma, for third time this episode, introducing our segment.
Perfect. Okay, so wrapping up for today, I was just thinking as well, ways to kind of increase your gaming social circle. We do have Armadale coming up in just a couple of weeks.
Yep, and then we've got our Mixed Gaming Day in October.
And so Armadale is Bring Your Big Toys and Play.
Yep.
And it's for teams of up to three.
Yep.
So a great way to actually kind of start some of that process that we talked about today.
Find a couple of mates and come along and play with
toys. Get together with some friends and pull your resources and see how many points you can come up with or what power level you can come up with, because it is an apocalypse day.
Yep.
And it's really just, it's just supposed to be fun.
Yeah. Opportunity, I mean, to bring your titans and big toys out.
All of our other events are supposed to be fun as well. But
yeah.
Yeah, certainly not a competitive
event,
really. So that's happening. And then, yes, we've got our mixed doubles happening at the Mixed Gaming Day, which is October.
Yep.
I've had a few people ask, does it have to be mixed genders who are coming to play? So, no, it doesn't. If your life partner, if that kind of the I don't know if that's a politically correct way or it just sounds pretentious. But so if your significant other, whatever, girlfriend, boyfriend, wife, husband, can be encouraged to come and play with you, then that's great. I think part of the idea of building a community is actually involving your significant other into the hobby in some way.
Yeah.
And this is, it was designed to be kind of like a soft entry for people to get into gaming events. But if your significant other isn't interested in playing, then that is also completely fine. Perhaps you have a parent or a child that may want to come along and play with you, or a grandparent,
yep,
or a grandchild, niece, nephew, uncle, cousin, then that's also cool. Or perhaps a friend who's just starting in tournaments and might, yep, want some sort of support to come and play in something like this. Or if you exhaust all of those options or can't be bothered looking into any of those options, you could always just bring a friend.
Yep.
So,
we don't
really
mind.
We don't discriminate in any way, shape or form.
Also happening on that day is War Machine, mm-hmm, Hordes. We've got a steamroller event happening that day. We've also, with a bit of luck, we'll be announcing the Bolt Action and Kill Team events. So we can have some people come along and, you know, play their chosen systems. We've probably got room for those four. We might squeeze one more in, but I've got two people interested in running those events. So we'll hopefully have those announced and tickets up for those shortly on the website.
Perfect. If you are thinking of coming to Armadale, please get your tickets ASAP, because we do need to confirm the venue.
Yes.
By... Is that this Friday?
Yeah.
Oh, we've got 2 days to confirm the venue. Get your tickets, people.
Yes.
What else is coming up? Obviously, we spoke about Crags event that's this weekend already.
Yep. Once we hit November, we hit Outpost 6030 with Skulls, and then obviously the 40K Masters happening at the end of November. And then we get 1 month's reprieve where we might get a Christmas party or something happening in December.
Yeah.
Before we go headlong into 2020.
Mm-hmm.
The varsity dates for October, November, and hopefully December will be finalised very shortly, so that you can play at one of our nights out at Varsity Project in Morley, just around the corner from the Galleria, if you're here in Western Australia.
Mm-hmm. I will be trying to get something new up and running. I'm not sure whether or not that's going to happen later this year, or it may start this year and kind of roll over into next year as well. But that's actually specifically aimed at people who are either in the like military or
past police. Or present.
Yeah, past, present, not necessarily future. So that's going to be in the pipeline as well.
Yep. Lastly, as Emma mentioned earlier, it is Suicide Prevention Month at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
If you are in need of support outside of what you can normally access, we'll make sure in the show notes there's links to a couple of different phone numbers you can call.
And we'll make sure that we put up the number for Lifeline, which is 13 11 14 off the top of my head, and not the phone number for Domino's or the police, which I gave last Wednesday night. So, yeah, and there's... It is 13 11 14 for Lifeline. Suicide callback service is available, 1300 659 467. Both of those are 24 hours, 7 days a week. And if the person on the end of the phone is an idiot, hang up, call back again, and you'll get someone different.
Yeah. Those are Australian numbers, obviously. So if you are somewhere else in this world, we can only...
You'll have to add a...
Yeah, plus 6-1. But no, we'd suggest obviously reaching out to Google. the appropriate authorities and agencies available to you wherever you might be. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's important that we acknowledge that and make sure that you understand you're not alone.
Most definitely not. I don't remember the stats for people suffering from mental health, but I believe it's something like 1 in 16 people experience anxiety or depression, and for men, I believe it's 1 in 14.
Yep, I go with that.
I might have made those stats up, though.
98% of stats are made up by the person on the moment.
No, I should know those stats.
You should know those stats, given what you do. Anyway, that's it for this episode. We've got some awesome stuff coming in the future, which we were hoping to have today, but it hasn't happened. So we're going to move forward.
That's and
it's just going to make sure that we're going
to... For the first time ever, I did consider whether or not we should postpone putting the episode out.
Just in case we heard from the
from
people
what we
today.
We were trying to organise for today, but...
No, we haven't. So we're going to forge ahead and we'll just spring a cool episode on you when we...
As soon as we possibly record
it. Yeah. All right, everyone take care. Enjoy your gaming. We hope to see you at an event soon. We hope you enjoyed the episode. Like, share, follow, all that other sort of stuff that we always ask you to do with social media. You probably get bored of now asking, but we'll ask again. And we'll see you soon.
Fantastic. Happy gaming, everyone.
You've been listening to the Objective Secured podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, you can visit our website, objectivesecured.com.au. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/objectivesecured, or you can email us, obsec@optusnet.com.au. Thanks for listening.